Hello and welcome back, listeners, to the Dual Screens podcast. I am once again your only host this week. That's right, it's Andy. And joining me this week is Paul Dolby, one half of Fossil Games and developer of Sunshine Manor, a retro horror game. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
How are you doing today?
Tired, but I'm all right.
Listen, you get my ass up early today, so
good.
11 a.m. is way out of bounds for me. I'm more of like a 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 2 p.m. kind of guy.
I wish I was.
That's what really bad gaming habits do. For those who are new here, this is a Dual Screens podcast, the world's number one indie developer interview podcast. Probably, that's a fact. Everyone in the gaming industry, be it a programmer, an artist, or a voice actor, has a story to tell, and this is their platform to do so. All right, Paul, now that's all said and done, all that fun stuff, let's get into you. Cool. First off, Sunshine Manor, congrats on crushing your Kickstarter goal and making it and being fully funded. That was a pleasure to see, because I was like, this game has to get funded because it looks amazing.
Thanks very much.
And what was that like for you guys, seeing just like those final days kind of tick on by and seeing those numbers like get higher and higher and knowing that you've secured funding for this game?
Yeah, it's an odd one. We weren't expecting it to happen on the day that it happened, because Kickstarter is notoriously dead on the weekends, but it happened on a Sunday. It was a really nice surprise. We've still got just over a week left on it as well. So now we're unlocking stretch goals and putting us to work.
Yeah, I saw that. One is you're going to be playing as a dog as a stretch goal. I saw that.
Yeah, so there's a demon dog that we're going to do a specific mission for.
Yeah, that makes me really happy as a dog owner and lover.
Me too.
You know, a lot of people focus on if you can pet the dog in a game, but I think playing as a dog is way more important than that.
Oh, yeah. You can pet the dog. Of course. It's way better being the demon dog.
I really feel like if you have a dog in your game now and you can't pet it, you're going to get totally, like, your balls chewed out by every reviewer out there.
Yeah, totally. Well, you know, what's the point in having one?
You know, I do want to ask you, while we're talking about dogs, before we go and get into the game itself, when you see a dog in a horror movie, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Oh, shit.
Yeah, right?
Every single time.
Like, oh, you better not kill that fucking dog.
Yeah, it's always that all the humans, they're expendable. You don't touch the dog.
You don't care about the people. They're there to die.
Exactly. You know?
And it's like, you can have characters who are just complete assholes who are built to get killed off.
Yeah, it's fine, but an innocent dog.
Yeah, don't touch the doggies. All right, so you're funded on Kickstarter. That's incredible. So what is Sunshine Manor? Tell us. Tell our listeners.
So Sunshine Manor is a prequel to a game we did 5 years ago, I can't remember now, called Camp Sunshine. And they're basically our love letter to 1980s horror movies. So Camp Sunshine was a massive love letter to Friday the 13th. And Camp Sunshine is the pixel horror equivalent of films like Reanimator and From Beyond and Nightmare on Elm Street and all sorts of other things that we're throwing in as well.
Yeah, it's funny because I was playing the demo earlier today and I was like, ooh, psychic powers? That reminds me of one of my favorite Jason movies.
Yeah.
That was like the new beginning when they had...
It's a six.
And then the new chapter, I think. Oh, it was seven.
Yeah, that's the one. Sorry, so that was seven, yeah.
The psychic girl. That was like, I think they just had watched Carrie. And I said, you know what? let's put this in our Jason movie. It needs more of that.
Well, guess where our psychic powers came from? It was exactly the same place.
So what spawned this? So you're saying it was a prequel to Camp Sunshine, which I adore, by the way.
Cool.
At what point did you say to yourselves, we have Camp Sunshine out, you want our next game to be a prequel to Camp Sunshine?
Well, because they're all kind of 1980s inspired things, it was always a fact of we wanted to do a trilogy because every good horror franchise has a trilogy. Mm-hmm. Way back when we wrote a trilogy for this, so part two came out first because it was what we were technically competent, able to do, basically. And now part one, now we're kind of a bit more versed in what we're actually doing because Camp Sunshine was done to see if we could do it. We never really thought we would, thought we could, but it did all right and we were kind of happy with it. But part one, we're now in it, you know, and trying to do it full time.
So you just sort of announced a third game on this show.
Oh yeah. It's around somewhere. I don't say it very often, but it's part of the Sunshine universe.
It's in the back of your head. So when the time comes, that one's ready to go. So what's changed gameplay wise between Camp and Sunshine Manor?
So in Camp Sunshine, the entire premise was we wanted you to kind of be a jock, but a bit of a dick, but also be completely vulnerable. So there was no fighting. There's no weapons. There's nothing to protect yourself with. Mm-hmm. So you've kind of just got to avoid. With Sunshine Manor, we did want the ability for you to kind of fight back a bit. And obviously, you know, Friday the 13th comes along, we think, oh, there's a nice little idea for psychic powers. So it's more the unlocking of the character's abilities that kind of kickstarts a load of stuff that happens that leads into Camp Sunshine and leads into the third game as well.
You know, I just had a really good idea right now. The third game should be called Camp Sunshine Manor.
No, it's already got a title, but I'm not telling you now.
Well, think about it. You can have the camp is built around the old manor, and that's how you do it.
All I will say is the third one is massively inspired by Hellraiser.
Oh man! Now I'm like, I want that game now instead.
You can't. It doesn't exist yet, but it will.
I know. Oh boy. So, what were some of the biggest lessons you guys learned when making Camp Sunshine that you brought into developing Sunshine Manor?
I think probably the biggest one is that people will do things in your game that you could never have expected, and will find things that, you know, 5-6 months worth of bug testing and bug fixing never found, because it just so happens that on the dark moon when all the clouds are aligned, that, you know, this thing happens and ruins the game. So it's allowed us to kind of see things differently with testing. But in terms of gameplay, I think most of the scares in Camp Sunshine kind of came from the player rather than us forcing a jump scare on you, which, you know, we do. But the bear kind of popping up and you hearing him running towards you is one of the, well, for us, it's one of the funniest things we've ever seen when we watch people on YouTube play it.
Yeah, I think horror and streaming were kind of meant to be, I feel.
Oh, it's so much fun watching people get scared.
Right. It reminds you of those old trailers where they have like the audience reaction as part of their promotional material.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, you have emotional games that people play on Twitch that they sometimes get, you know, a little weepy-eyed over, which I understand, but nothing beats like horror for reactions. You can have the most hardened person.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's the difference is if it's a jump scare, it doesn't last. The horror doesn't last. But if it's something that's happening as a direct result of something you've done, and you've triggered something and now you've got to work your way out of it, I think that's where the real horror is, because it's a horror of your own making to some degree, and you've got to work your way out of your mess.
Right, and also I think the biggest thing here is that you're able to scare people with sprites. Retro.
Yeah, man.
And somehow you're making what's like a Nintendo game, you know, for all intents and purposes, terrifying. How do you pull that off?
I think the mix of the kind of cuteness of it all and then the drenching the whole thing in buckets of pixelated blood, horror music that's, you know, directly from the 80s, which, you know, we write and we do all of that, and just being basically 80s horror movie nuts. The attention to detail kind of runs away with us sometimes. So, but I think the cuteness versus the abject horror that we force upon these lovely looking characters is where it works. We didn't expect it to, but people seem to latch on. So it was really cool.
Well, that's how you set the trap. It's like, oh, look, it's a little game that looks like, you know, Earthbound or Zelda. It's not gonna, it's not gonna bite. It won't hurt you.
Nope.
And then you have these, like, you know, blood-soaked bears stalking you, or these shadow men coming out of the corners, and just, and of course, I think in a game like this, the audio design has to be totally on point. So let's get into the sound, because I feel that nothing is more 80s than that synth wave soundtrack you guys got going on.
Yep,
and it's amazing. So let's talk about the sound design, how you guys approach that in a horror game.
So basically, I have a normal job. This is not something that we do full time, although it might change with things that are happening. But my normal job is based around music, and the 1980s kind of synth stuff is where I'm at. That's my jam. So John Carpenter and mm-hmm. things like that's where it is for me. So it was, over the years, I've built up a bit of a collection of these old school synths, and you can't write anything else on them when you've got kind of, you know, horror on your brain. All you can write is creepy sounding stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's not a chore to write music for these games. It's really good fun. And sound design in horror is such a huge part of it anyway. You know, if you didn't have the kind of, you know, creepy footsteps or the breathing or things like that, it just wouldn't put people on edge. So you have to really work hard on that element, and especially when it's pixel art stuff, the sound kind of does a lot more work.
What level of arousal do you feel with the Stranger Things opening theme kicks in?
What's the scale? What scale are we on?
I mean, let's, you know, flaccid to completely rock hard. What's the in between?
We'll go for Morning Wood.
Like a half chub. So I do want to touch upon horror in general. It seems like back in the early 90s, mm-hmm. through the end of, you know, the 90s, horror was a big thing in gaming. Resident Evil, yep. Clock Tower, Silent Hill, Fatal Frame. It seemed like every major developer wanted to have their hand in the horror genre pop at some point. Yep. But now it seems like a lot have stepped back, and you have some that are notable, but I feel like it's left a lot to indie developers to create the next big horror games. Why do you think that is?
I think it's very, very difficult with large franchises to sell enormous units when you're being utterly horrendous and get past ratings. And whereas for an indie developer, we don't care. We go, we'll submit the game and go, oh, go on, you know, tell us the rating. I hope we get an M, because that would be amazing. Whereas, you know, for a larger company, that's kind of spells death to some degree. So it's, I think we get away with it because there's only two of us. We can do what we want.
Right.
they've got to answer to a lot more people.
That's the best part, having this that complete freedom without someone saying, you know what, this is just a little bit too much for a Nintendo Switch title. Can you just kind of cut out all this crap? Like, no. Decapitation stays in. Nudity stays in.
Yep. Well, I mean, there was a time when the Switch was quite clean of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And we were way back hoping that it would change, you know, with indie horror kind of coming out the way it was. Luckily, it has. So, we're able to move on. But, you know, as again, being an indie developer, we kind of, it sounds horrible, but we don't really care. we're going to make the game that we want to make, because it's. If we're into it, we know an awful lot of other people should be too, or I hope so.
Well, when you look back at some of the most memorable horror franchises, you know, game or movie, it's the ones that took chances and were like,
yeah,
screw the censors and we're going to do our own thing. Make this like exploitative and bloody and gory and just show all the naughty bits we can.
And yeah, absolutely.
That's the best part about horror. It's for everyone. And it kind of like, you know, it's a big middle finger to societal norms in a sense, because it shows you everything. It's raw in its most raw form.
Yeah. I think real creativity lives within horror. You know, you only have to look at kind of the spawning of movies, you know, Blair Witch, Paranormal Activity, things like that, and found footage more recently, to see that people are still coming up with new and interesting ways to make you shit yourself. And you know, there's Host, for example, on Shudder, which was, yeah, they filmed that in lockdown on Zoom, and you think, that's incredible, what a great idea. And that wouldn't work for a romance film, or it wouldn't work for anything. But horror, it's something, you know, being subverted and fucked up, and it's really clever.
Yeah, a lot like there's that film Unfriended that did.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was like over a Facebook chat, and I think it was like a Google chat call, like a Skype. It was a Skype call. Skype call.
Yeah, it was a Skype call. Yeah.
And it's like, this idea could only work, I feel, in a horror.
Yeah, setting. Totally. If you liked Unfriended, watch Host. It's like 56 minutes long, something like that. It's not very long, but it's Unfriended on steroids. It's incredibly good.
Oh my God. All right, I'm going to just download that later just, for future references. You know, thanks for to end the month. I'll just watch that for a bit. So what do you say to those people who would look at a game like yours and say, it's sprites, it's cutesy, but I can't take it too seriously. I mean, it's fun for a nostalgia factor, but how much depth does it really have?
I'd say really it's, without being too blunt, it doesn't really
matter. No, be blunt. Be as blunt as you like, sir.
Well, it doesn't really matter to us, because the goal for this, 4 or 5 years ago, was to make this story, and that's what we're doing. You know, come hell or high water, this is what we're going to finish. And thankfully, you know, the first part we put out with no PR, no promo, no nothing, and it did really, really well, and we were blown away. I'd say we've got normal jobs and normal lives and families, and to see this thing kind of take off was just really cool. And it's allowed us to continue doing it. So if you look at the game and you don't think it's for you, maybe it's not. But if you want to give it a go, give it a go. You never know, you might find something about it that you like.
Was that the first sense for the team when Camp Sunshine came out and it was a success? You thought, this could actually be a full-time job for us. We could stop doing our boring 9-to-5 and do this full-time.
It's always been the dream to do it. It's a lot of work. It's way more work than my day job to do this. But we're realists with it. So it was, if it's successful, if it makes a decent amount of money, we'll treat it as, you know, money that we've got for doing something we would have done anyway. And then we'll put it back into Game 2 and Game 3 and see how long we can ride it for. Because we've got a lot of ideas, we've got a lot of people that we want to work with, so why not? We'll give it a go.
What put you on this path into game development?
My mum.
Really? Oh wow! See, my mom was like, "Nope, you're gonna get a real job." I was like, "Screw you, mom."
No, I can't remember how old. Maybe 8, maybe 9 years old. Programming on the Sinclair ZX Spectrum. And we used to get a magazine every month, and on the back page would be like a couple of hundred lines of code that you'd have to copy out, and it would do things. It would do a bouncing ball or something like that. And I kind of learned it by osmosis, and I realized that I could do this and that would make a ball appear, and then I could do this and I could move it with a key. So it became one of these, you know, I'll experiment and see what happens. So I've always tinkered with it. And there's been lots of little concepts, and you know, my hard drive's full of crap that we'll never put out. but it's always been there because it's fun. It's really fun to see an idea and kind of tell a story alongside it.
Well, and also you get to play mad scientist, you know, bringing things
too
to
true.
Instead of seeing them move around and do things on their own, apparently sometimes, yeah, that you're not aware of.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's so much fun to when like you get a set of sprites, you know, Josh, the other guy in Fossil Games, when he sends a set of sprites, we always kind of look at them and think, you know, they're okay. But the minute you put them in the game, the minute you attach sound to them, the minute you attach lighting to them, the minute you're using them to do something, they take on a whole new life of their own. And it's amazing to see this kind of story come real.
So that's a good segue into story and character. So Ada, yeah, is the main character for Sunshine Manor. What's she like? What's her backstory? What is she doing in this game?
She was or is at the start of the game, she's trick or treating. Mm-hmm. And they turn up at the old Aitken house, which has been abandoned for a few years following a series of horrendous things that had happened. And then promptly gets trapped inside the manor, and that's that. and the rest is the story that you find out. But she's quite a reluctant hero, but can kick ass.
It's like a Rolodex of like horror cliches. Like, okay, so not super virus. We're not going to do alien invasion. Oh, stuck in the manor. Perfect. That's the one we're going to use.
Exactly. You've got to get your little nods in there. This is stuff we grew up on.
Right, and it has to feel familiar enough to get people into get the rooms, yep, in the tent, essentially. And then once, exactly, you lock the door, some strange shit starts, exactly, going on.
It all goes off. It all goes down.
I think horror, more than most genres, I've always loved their portrayal of strong female characters.
Yeah, definitely. I think the whole final girl thing is a bit overdone, to be honest. But I think horror allows so much more kind of creativity with their characters, you know, regardless of gender, identity, whatever. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. As long as you're clever enough to outwit the thing that's coming, then you'll be a legend.
Yeah, this is why people should take horror more seriously.
Exactly.
It's the most like embracing, inclusive genre. Like when it comes to the kill count, everyone's up for grabs. No one can be spared. You know, nope. that is, I think, true equality is in the horror genre.
Exactly. You everyone can else. Be the hero. Everyone can be the victim.
Except for the dog. Don't fuck with the dog.
Don't touch the dog.
So are you guys still coding with RPG Maker for this, for the prequel, or you moved on to a different engine?
We've shifted out completely. Mm. We basically started in RPG Maker because none of us knew how to code. Then I promptly learned JavaScript and started to modify the whole thing so it could do what we wanted it to do. And then now we're in different engines and different kind of, you know, design stuff all over the place for Sunshine Manor. It's pretty sprawling.
What has it allowed you to do differently that you couldn't do beforehand with RPG Maker?
It's now one of those things where if we have an idea, we know we could probably do it, whereas we had to check if we could do it because of the limitations that RPG Maker gave us. Yeah, and some of that was great, kind of trying to break out of those limitations. It was brilliant fun to see what we could do within something like that. But now, for example, you know, we can figure out a demon that spits fire, that also farts gas, and think, yeah, we could make that work. We could figure out a way to make that happen. So you've played the demo. You've right, probably seen like the little purple demon things, the sprinters.
Yes.
So they talk to each other in the code, in the game. They talk to each other nonstop. So if one of them notices you and is nearby other ones, it will tell them, and it will call ones from other rooms to come and get you.
That's probably the most horrifying thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
It's awesome. It's so much fun figuring out these little... Like, for example, you walk on any water, they'll hear it. because it genuinely creates sound waves that bounce off the walls. And if they touch a sprinter, you can't see them, but if they touch a sprinter, that sprinter will come and check out where that sound was. So Metal Gear Solid for the win.
Yeah, I mean, for most folks, you would feel in a game that looks like this, it's just for the aesthetic. Oh, there's a sound effect when I go underwater. That's a nice little touch that they added in there. It's immersive, but you're like, this is how it's going to totally fuck you over.
Yeah, it will. So you know, if you push an object in the game, it creates a sound. That sound echoes off the walls. And if, I don't know, the Shadow Man is kind of near enough, he might hear it. He might then redivert his path from whatever he was doing, because he's doing stuff all the time, to come and see what this noise was.
And I love that clock tower sense of that audio cue when the music kind of starts setting in.
Yeah, it's cool, isn't it?
It's like things are about to go down. So they don't make games like that anymore. They really get like under your skin, like so deep, it's like in your bones in a sense, the level of dread. And again, looking at a game that looks like this, you would think it really couldn't scare you, but it somehow finds a way to do so.
Yeah, we do our best with what we've got. And I think it forces us to be a bit more creative, because yeah, we could have things in full 3D jumping out at you and looking terrifying. You know, Outlast is one of the scariest games I've ever played. But doing it in pixel art kind of makes us go, right, we need to be clever. Because obviously you're on the back foot when things look cute.
What does the gameplay loop look like in this game for our listeners? You can go in more detail into that. What can they expect?
So you're essentially taking part in an 80s horror movie. So you start as every character would start in an 80s horror movie, being unaware and somewhat clueless as to what's going on, to at the end when all the shit has gone down, and believe me, it goes down, to being, you know, pretty badass and having a suite of things that you can kind of deploy and use to battle everything that we're going to throw at you at the end of this game that basically triggers Camp Sunshine.
Yeah, I'm looking at your Kickstarter page right now, looking at the costumes, this Plasmancer costume you got going on.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
there's a few we've got. So for example, to give you a little idea, later on in the game, you have the ability to find bodies in the demon realm and to go and place them in various spots. And you place them in various spots so that any demons that are interested in eating that kind of thing would probably eat that rather than going for you. So you have these kind of nice little push-pull mechanisms that you can do with dead bodies and leaving nice little trails of blood behind you. And yeah, it's lovely.
It's but like setting up bait in a sense.
Yeah. You're setting up bait. So if you need to make a run for it, you know that you're probably okay.
I just want to underscore the fact that you just said you're pulling bodies and pushing them, leaving them behind blood trails and saying, it's cute.
It is cute. It's nice. That's fine. That's a normal Wednesday for us.
Of course, yeah.
Look, we crucified a child in Camp Sunshine. It's we can get away with anything.
See, you know what, Paul? I think for me, like whenever a film or a game has the balls to kill a child, it gets more points for me for some reason.
Well, it was one of those that we had to kind of do it for the stories. And we did over it for quite a while, but then we got to the point where we went, well, the only people we've actually got to answer to is us. And if we don't do it, we know we'll be really annoyed that we kind of wimped out.
Yeah, I remember when I watched the Blob remake when I was a kid, and there's the scene in the sewer when one of the kid's friends, he's probably less than 13 years old at the time.
Oh, yeah.
He gets, like, totally gobbled up, and they show you in full horror detail, like, the kid being, like, devoured.
And it's totally. Didn't that make it even more scary for you?
Right, because you think, okay, kid.
Oh, hang on one second, Sorry, the front door's going.
Could be a guy in a bear costume. Could be a creepy shadow man. Who could it be? This is the joy of doing a live show. Well, not live, but you know, we leave all these bits in. It's fun that way. And that's what we like to do here on the show. We just leave all the fun bits in. And whatever happens, happens.
Hello, I'm back. Sorry.
See, yeah, it's okay. Listen. Again, I didn't warn you. This show is completely unedited, uncut. So that's all going to be left in because it's part of the fun here on this podcast.
Yeah, definitely. That, it'll serve me for buying shit on Amazon.
What did you get?
Excitingly, some shelves. But they're to go. They're to put hardcore horror shit. Figures on. Yeah.
Oh, right. Well, you see, now you made them infinitely cooler.
Yeah, there we go.
So what's next? After the Kickstarter campaign, it's going to be done in a couple of days now. I would say, what is it, like 6-7 days? Last at 9 days to go from today?
Yeah, 7, something. I can't remember.
So what's the next step for us on China?
So the next step for us is to finish it. So the core engine is done. So the mechanics that we want in the game are done. Now it's a case of basically doing everything for the missions. You've seen part of the mission that you've done where you had to rescue the chef if you've played the prologue, but there is more to that mission, which we kind of pulled out because we wanted to leave something for when you restart the game again and surprise you a little more. So it's a case of finishing off the missions and then getting the game out and into Nintendo's hands so they can QA it to hell and back. And then while that's happening, we'll be working on a secret project, I think.
Secret project?
Secret project.
Oh my God, you guys, you're just making games while making games at this point.
Yeah, this one is one that I think if we pull it off, could be really interesting.
All right, so you're going to come back on the show at some point in the near future.
That's yeah, cool. Yeah,
that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, of course. Anytime
we can speak off the record when we're done recording about this secret project, because now I'm like, I gotta ask him. I gotta find out if it's a horror game.
It's a horror game. I'll tell you that.
Goodness. So is there a release window you guys have in mind?
We're heading for Halloween 2021 at the minute, and that includes if we get the digital done beforehand, then it'll be out beforehand. But the physical takes time, and that's in the hands of Premium Edition, who are amazing human beings, and are basically taking care of the Switch physical for us and all of its lovely, lovely content.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure this demands some sort of physical release with a little.
Oh yeah, it was always a dream to get it in a real box.
Oh yeah,
and now, you know, thanks to people we work with, that it happened. It's very surreal. I think the moment when we actually get one and we hold it, we're going to have a little moment.
Yeah, it's like, oh, here's a Nintendo cartridge with your game on it. This is your game. Yeah. On the Nintendo.
Yeah, well, both games. Two games come on one card.
On the Nintendo system.
How cool is that?
See, that's the ultimate dream right there for people like us who just grew up playing games and loving them. It's like seeing it like on an actual system. Like, shit, I make games.
Yeah.
Like, I made a Nintendo game, you can say to people.
The oddest thing is seeing people play it. And obviously with YouTube and Twitch and stuff like that coming to the fore, yeah, it's all well and good for bigger, you know, bigger, more amazing games than ours, like, you know, Dead by Daylight, Friday the 13th and stuff like that. And Phasmophobia, for example, is superb. Watching people play our little thing, we kind of just go, oh my God, it's just weird. And, you know, seeing them get scared at the little beats that we've put in, and yeah, it's great. It's so much fun.
You're doing God's work, Paul.
Well, no, not gods.
Oh, that's true.
we'll go south.
A little different way on that one. Okay, so I think it's time to move into our favorite segment on the show, and that's rapid fire questions.
Cool. Yeah, go for it.
Learn some more about you. What kind of person you really like?
Oh shit!
And should be pretty fun. All right, so feel like horror theme questions for you.
Okay.
You're trapped in the most cliche horror setup you can think of. Who is at your side? Which horror franchise heroine would you have at your side?
Barbara Crampton.
Ooh, okay. That's a great choice.
Yeah, it is.
All right. Okay. Cool. in no particular order, what are your top five horror movies?
Of all time ever?
Mm-hmm.
Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
Oh, of course, Dream Warriors.
Alien.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many. Friday the 13th, Part 6.
Mm-hmm.
4 maybe. No, I'll just take 6 out of that. Hellraiser. How many have I got now? Is that 4?
4, yeah.
Oh, lordy lord. I'll probably go Blair Witch Project.
Oh, wow. You went from almost entirely slasher to a little more psychological with that last pick.
Yeah, it was one of those that just broke the mold.
On the note that you mentioned Jason Lives, Friday the 13th, Part 6, mm-hmm. I recently read an article about there was an idea for a sequel to that movie that the original director had in mind. It was set in Crystal Lake over Thanksgiving. So it was like a winter backdrop.
Yeah.
So the idea was Jason stalking the sorority girls over an actual frozen Crystal Lake. And just that image makes me all sorts of wet. Okay.
Well, 6. 6 just looked amazing.
Well, that was the James Bond of Jason movies.
Yeah.
I mean, the intro was strictly Bond when you look at it.
Oh, yeah, well. Yeah, I can forgive the intro because the rest of it just knocks it out of the park.
Yeah. Oh my God! You should also watch. I think it's on YouTube. Never Hike Alone in the Snow. It's a sequel to a YouTube fan film, Friday the 13th, called Never Hike Alone. But it stars the actor that played Tommy Jarvis from Part 6.
Oh, nice!
Yeah.
Never Hike Alone in the Snow. Okay, I'll have a look.
Okay, so you just listed your top five horror films.
Yes.
Now you're on an island. You can only take one of them with you. Which one do you choose?
Dream Warriors.
Yeah. Look what the prime time, bitch. That's
exactly.
I love how fast you were with that one too, because it's the obvious answer. Because
I've seen it. That was the first horror movie I ever saw.
Really?
I was 12 mm-hmm. or 13. And I watched it at 1 o'clock in the morning on a mm-hmm. on a top loading VCR player, mm-hmm. so my parents couldn't hear me. And I thought, oh yeah, this shit's my jam.
See, mine was Child's Play. Was the first one I saw.
Oh, well, that's not a bad one. That's not a bad one.
But Dream Warriors, my cousins who are a little bit older than I was lived upstairs in our 2-family house. They had got it on VHS in the local video rental store across the street from where we lived, and we had watched it basically on a loop, and I remember not sleeping for days on end. I was why must we keep watching this movie?
there's not one beat that's wrong in that film. It's so good.
All right. You're going out to dinner with your significant other, and they have to babysit your child. Who would you rather babysit, Basket Case or Chud?
Can I have both?
Oh, okay. We're trying to raise your kid right then. That's a good way of doing it.
Let him juke it out. Come on. only the victor can have him.
All right, let's get into some more general questions that aren't totally weird and based on horror that listeners might actually appreciate. Okay. Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
Damn right,
okay. Would you rather have the power of flight or invisibility?
Invisibility.
Hmm. What's something you believe without evidence?
That aliens exist.
Hmm. Of course. What do you think people notice most about you?
I'm ridiculously tall.
Hmm. Would you rather have skin that changes color based on your emotions or have tattoos appear all over your body depicting what you did yesterday?
Oh, tattoos, definitely. That'd be amazing. It's just me eating chips all day long.
That sounds accurate.
Yeah.
Is it okay to sleep with socks on?
No.
Which is more preferable, being nice or being fair?
Being fair.
What is the dumbest way you've ever injured yourself?
Oh, man. Way too many ways. I tried to backflip off a climbing frame when I was 14 or 15 and broke my arm.
You just decided to do a backflip, like, you know, I could do this, probably.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure, hey, that I said, hey, watch what I can do, and then promptly broke my arm.
Yeah, go to the ER.
Yeah, exactly.
What I can do, get a cast on my arm.
Yeah.
Is cereal a soup?
Yes.
Give me a non-inspirational quote that you just thought of right now.
Just sit down. Don't bother about it. It'll all work its way out.
When was the last time you hugged someone?
This morning.
Oh, nice. Would you rather have a magic van that can teleport you anywhere you want in time, or a magic ring that when you touch a book, you absorb all the knowledge inside?
The ring.
Yeah. Definitely the ring.
Yeah. You get both sides of the argument that way.
I'd be touching all sorts of books. Because you think with the ring, you'd eventually amass enough knowledge to make your own time travel device.
Well, actually, yeah, that's a really good point.
Would you rather have one real get-out-of-jail-free card or a key that opens any door?
A key that opens any door.
What kind of doors would you open, by the way, with that key? What was the first door you would go unlock? I'm curious.
It was the bank.
What is the best horror game of all time?
Oh, man, alive. Silent Hill.
Ah. Oh, you know, I had a nightmare last night, Paul. That there was a new Silent Hill game that came out.
Oh, and it
was terrible. I remember playing it in my dream, saying to myself, there's no detail in these graphics at all. It looks like shite. And it was like a stealth action game.
Oh, no.
I think it's just a bleed over playing Ghost of Tsushima till 4 in the morning. That's the influence there I'm seeing.
Yeah. No, the original Silent Hill is killer.
What is your best moment from that game? What really stands out to you?
If I can go, the one that always comes back to me, I think it's 2, where you're going under the lake. And the sound just was fucking terrifying.
Yeah, we need that franchise to be back at some point in my life.
PT, did you ever get to play PT?
PT was the ultimate cock tease, though. PT was, look at this concept that we made just to have to tease a sequel to Silent Hill.
Yeah.
And that was like the best piece of marketing ever. Then you have all that hype built around it, and then they open and cancel the thing.
Yep. It could have been amazing. PT was like, just a work of art.
It's like the top 10 anime betrayals right there. That I will never forget that betrayal from Konami.
Yeah, it's a proper stab, that one.
Oh, boy. All right, let's see what else we got here in the old rapid-fire question. Oh, what was your last thought before going to bed last night?
I'm really tired, but I know I won't sleep.
Mm-hmm. What's a body part you wouldn't mind losing?
My nose.
Right. And I think the final question we can ask before we wrap up the show, if you could be any iconic slasher villain and live forever in that universe as the killer, who would you pick and why?
Oh, man. Pinhead. I'll go with Pinhead. Not really a slasher, but
no, it's fine. He's an iconic horror figure. He has minions to slash for him, so it's totally fine.
it's more the kind of the sights and stuff that he's seen, and the backstory behind him is just bonkers.
We have such sights to show you.
Beautiful.
You know, there's one of my favorite Pinhead lines is in the third movie.
Is that don't scream? It's a
no. It's when that's a good one too. It's when he goes in the church, and everything's like exploding around him, and he holds a priest holds a cross to him, and the cross either melts or burns or something or other, and the priest says, "You'll burn for this," and Pinhead says, "Burn, such a limited imagination." It's just so good. So good. Some of the best written lines were ever given to Pinhead.
The original Hellraiser is just so good.
I mean, Jesus wept. That's like the best line ever.
It's disgustingly good.
Have you ever seen, they did like a Hellraiser movie that was made in like a day? Just to keep the rights of the movie.
Yeah, it was the one with the detective, wasn't it?
Right, I think so, yeah. It was made like, I think, either in a day or in a week. It was a really short turnaround, but you know, when you hold rights to a franchise, if you don't use it, you lose it.
Yeah.
I was like, these expire like in a month or so. Let's make a shitty movie, put it on DVD, and keep hold of the rights, because you never know if we're going to use them again.
Kind of after Hellraiser 3, they just all died off anyway.
Right. Yeah. There was one in space at some point. There was one that was online, which wasn't that bad, but still.
Yeah, there was one that went back through the history of the box and, you know.
Right.
Ugh. No, just, you know, give me Pinhead, give me his backstory, give me what he's doing next.
All right, Paul, this has been a treat.
Thank you. It's been
discussing horror so early in the day. I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch this and watch that and watch this and play this. All right. So where can our listeners find you? Find Sunshine Manor and Camp Sunshine as well. Give us all the plugs you want to do, all the details, all the social medias. Go for it.
So we're old, and social media isn't our best thing, but we're on Twitter as Fossil Games. Steam, you can find Camp Sunshine. You can find the Sunshine Manor prologue on there. And if you're listening before, I think, the 7th of November, we're still on Kickstarter.
All right. So all of you out there, do your work and back this amazing game. And it deserves all of your money. And I can't wait. It's going to be at least a year before I play this game.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But you know what? It's okay. Listen. I'll bring you back on. We'll have more in-depth conversations about this game, that top secret game you're working on, apparently. And all right, Paul, thank you so much for coming on the show.
No, thank you.
You are a most excellent guest. You are a scholar. And one day, I want to bring you back on for some horror trivia to really test your knowledge.
It's a date.
Because I've met a couple of horror devs in this past couple of weeks doing our horror game coverage for the month, and some say they know a lot about horror movies specifically. And I think, I may know more than you, because I'm that much of a freak when it comes to horror films. I watch a lot of trash. So,
me too.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. All right. Thank you, Paul. Thank you so much. And listener,
thanks, man.
Thank you for being here for this exciting episode of the Dual Screens podcast. Since Steven is not here, I'll make him do all the closing housekeeping crap. That's his punishment. But I will still steal his sign off, and that is, as always, please be excellent to each other.